Guardian Unlimited.
I'm James Randerson, science correspondent on The Guardian. I spoke to Professor Janet Brown of Harvard University about Charles Darwin's skills with money. I asked what started her on the subject.
I was first brought to think about that by a comment that Darwin made in response to a questionnaire that was sent to him quite late in his life in 1873 by his cousin Francis Galton. And Francis Galton was the man who went on to develop the science of eugenics and wrote very extensively about that. And his first interest was in hereditary genius, hereditary talents generally, and he had devised a questionnaire that he sent out to all the fellows of the Royal Society in that year, 1873, asking them all kinds of different questions about what had brought them towards science. There were questions about family background, health, their mental traits, their education, their politics, and particularly for Galton, who was an atheist, what their religious beliefs were. And Galton used all this information. He got 104 replies. He used all the information, processed it very carefully, to write a book that was published the next year called English Men of Science, Their Nature and Nurture.
And it was almost, it sounds like it was almost a kind of natural history of British scientists at the time.
Yes, it was exactly a natural history. The questionnaire was quite an unusual thing to produce in those days. I wouldn't like to go out on a limb and say it was the first such psychological questionnaire, but I should think it's a very early one.
And Darwin had a very interesting answer to the final question.
The answerer was invited to say at the end if they felt they had any special talents. And Darwin's answer is the one that has really intrigued many of us. He writes, "I have no special talents, none except for business." And this is a quotation from his reply, "as evinced by keeping accounts, replies to correspondence, and investing money very well." So where you and I, lots of people, would think, well, Darwin's special talent was his very high skill at observing, let's say, or that he was very patient in collecting evidence, or that he had a very deep love for natural history. Darwin doesn't choose to say those. He says he was very good at keeping accounts.
And he wasn't lying either. When you showed some examples of his account books, they really are meticulous.
Darwin was meticulous in keeping accounts. Every penny that left his hands, he recorded in a cash book so that from 2 or 3 days after he got married, he kept books, records of everything he had spent since that time, right up until his death. And you could trace, money that Darwin spent on clothes, let's say, in the different firms in London and in the Maidstone, the town nearest to where he used to live, the accounts that he paid. And he often says new trousers and then the amount of money that it cost him, new shoes. As the children grew up, of course, they had all kinds of expenses. And they're catalogued under different headings, the name of each child and how much was spent on them, the governesses, how much was spent on educating the family. Darwin includes his own expenses under the heading of science, so we can read how much he spent on buying a microscope, how much he spent on buying new books, how much he spent on stationery and writing paper, fountain pens. And he kept accounts for the garden, for the household, for the food, for example. So these are not just of Darwinian interest, they're really wonderful social documents about Victorian family life.
And there's a kind of moral framework to this that he talks about. What is that moral framework?
For good Victorian married men, to provide for your family was a very strong requirement. That it wasn't just sensible, as we might all retrospectively think, but it was also a moral duty that the best kind of individuals were those who contributed in this way to the national economy. And Darwin has a kind of evolutionary view on this. Darwin does believe, and we see it in quite a few of his private writings, that the accumulation of financial capital was a good thing in itself. And he writes in one of his later books, in The Descent of Man, he writes, the accumulation of capital is an excellent thing. It allows the development of the embellishments of culture. It allows for civilization.
And this is where things get a little bit more speculative, I guess, but everyone will be interested to know, you know, what does this have to do with his ideas about natural selection, do you think?
Well, I've been wondering, and it is speculative, but I've been wondering if these accounts and the way that Darwin was so meticulous in recording everything, he was very good also at turning these individual financial records into generalized categories of expenditure, so that at the end of each year he would add everything up and he would write it all down, that he had spent however many pounds on himself, however many pounds on the children, however many pounds on science. And that these, if one takes a big metaphorical jump, these actually could reflect the same ways of thought that we see when he's working in evolutionary theory, that the many different variations in animals and plants could be thought of as small financial transactions that generally accumulate up into some bigger kind of organic capital, so that a species might be thought of as something that has accumulated capital over a number of generations, over many, many generations. And that Darwin's understanding of how finances work provided a metaphor for him in the world of organic evolution, that animals and plants were, those animals and plants that were very successful were those that had accumulated some kind of adaptive capital.
For more interviews like this and the very best analysis of the worlds of science and technology, make sure you listen to our Science Weekly podcast. Head to guardian.co.uk/science for more.
Guardian Unlimited.